WMPG is on the air thanks to listener donations and generous support from the University of Southern Maine. USM educates Maine's future artists, business people, engineers, healthcare professionals, lawyers, managers, public servants, scientists, and teachers. More information is available at usm.maine.edu.
One wishes to thank the following sponsors and partners: the A.R. Gould School at Long Creek Youth Development Center, Periscope Youth Radio from Massachusetts Institute of Technology, and Youth Radio from Youth Media in Oakland, California. The views, opinions, and conclusions expressed on Blunt Youth Radio are those of the speakers and guests, not necessarily those of WMPG or the University of Southern Maine or its officers and trustees. Blunt welcomes opposing views.
That we left back, we want to talk right down to earth and leave it with everybody here.
Let me be clear. Make no mistakes.
You are listening to
what?
You get treated. Politicians. Teachers. Lecturers.
Illegal drugs and teenage drinking can often be difficult for teenagers to discuss openly.
Also, despite the best efforts of many concerned adults, the culture of drugs and drinking alcohol is still quite prevalent among today's youth.
Ned on Blunt will be speaking about teenage drug use and drinking.
We've got Dave C., a member of Support Network Al-Anon. We'll hear from Tim Berry, a recovered cocaine addict. Anthony Zenny, one of the organizers of this month's marijuana legalization campaign in Portland, and Dave Marshall, a city council member involved in the same marijuana legalization efforts.
I'm your host, Lucy Tabb.
And I'm Isaac High. And I'd like to remind everybody listening that this is indeed a call-in show. Our number is 780-4909. Again, that's 780-4909. You know, anything from personal anecdotes, thoughts on whatever we'll be talking about, questions for our guests, questions for us, would be much appreciated, and we'd love to hear from you.
We'll be starting by listening to a piece by Blunt member Claire Kenny on the culture of drugs and drinking within her high school.
During last Tuesday's election, Portlanders voted on whether or not to legalize the use of marijuana for people over 21 in the city of Portland. Legalization passed with over 60%. I talked to teens and adults at Casco Bay High School about their thoughts on drinking and drugging.
You know, it's really popular and, you know, our media to see people drinking and smoking and, you know, cigarettes or marijuana. So, of course, the youth wants to try it out. Everyone's in an experimental state in their teens and young adulthood, which is totally understandable. I just think that it really comes down to a personal level. Being able to know yourself well enough to understand whether or not you can use it effectively or, you know, if you're prepared for that. Because, you know, of course the youth is going to get a hold of it. They did before it was legal. They will, of course, now. We can also ramp up information about it on a wider scale and not propaganda for or against, but just general information on usage, impacts, pros, cons, just so that people understand what it is that they're using and know if it's safe for them or other people around them.
I mean, drugs are going to be a problem across the U.S., like, always. I think it's definitely a responsibility for parents and, like, adult figures and the youth's lives to inform them on the problems of drinking and doing drugs. And definitely in school and safe places should play a big role in teaching children and youth and teens, etc., about the problems of it.
Because marijuana is much safer than tobacco and alcohol, and I just had a first thought. If they're going to legalize marijuana, why not legalize LSD, ecstasy, or other drugs besides marijuana?
I think it's a very controversial topic, and I think there's people who support both sides very strongly.
Do a little at first and see how you feel. That's really the only way. I don't know. Just do however much you feel like doing. And if it's a bad amount, just go to the hospital.
students, youth need to know that, you know, there is still the law, and there are very strict regulations and laws in terms of drinking age that need to be, you know, respected, and more importantly, you know, supported, you know, with fellow peers, and just, you know, taking care of each other, because it's really what it comes down to is as a wellness issue for individuals and the community. And when people are respecting that law and take care of each other, it makes sense. And but, you know, especially for kids under 21, you know, obviously it's against the law. It's obviously been proven to, you know, just speaking about alcohol and many other substances, you know, can really be harmful for your body, physically, emotionally, socially, in every possibility, every way. So it's just important to be really clear about, you know, the law. But again, it still comes back to wellness.
Whether it's laws or peers, young people will always be struggling with the issues of drugs and alcohol in society. This is Claire Kenny reporting from Blunt Youth Radio.
All right, welcome back. So our first guest tonight is Dave C. He's been a member of Al-Anon, which is a support network similar to Alcoholics Anonymous, but for the families and friends of alcoholics, for 4 years. First of all, just how do you think that piece reflected what kids are really thinking? I understand that you have some children of your own.
Yeah, I do. I'm very fortunate. I've got three kids.
Mm-hmm.
The oldest is almost 17.
Yep.
And then a 15-year-old and an 11-year-old.
Mm-hmm.
And my impression is that a lot of what I heard was consistent with what is around them, mm-hmm. and would be going through their heads, in terms of the culture and the choice associated with drugs and alcohol.
Yep. So I suppose my first question about your involvement with Al-Anon is just, how did you or how do families generally learn about it and get involved?
Well, it's an interesting program. It's been around for about 60 years, mm-hmm. but... it's an anonymous program, and so typically people come in with what's called the gift of desperation, where they've been living their life a certain way for a long time, surrounded or either with somebody who suffers alcoholism or having grown up in a family in which alcoholism was prevalent, and they've got some behaviors and some attitudes that don't work for them anymore, and they find a meeting, and, you know... They come in desperate. When I came in 4 years ago, I just wanted the answers, the playbook to how to live with folks that are suffering. And what I found was a whole different program, that it was more about keeping the focus on myself and who I am and what I can control. And it was a whole nother vocabulary for me for a long time. But I'm starting to get the hang of it. And what keeps me going back is that I keep feeling like I'm learning something new every day, mm-hmm. when I go to meetings.
So could what you learn in Al-Anon help people outside of Al-Anon or be applied to helping teenagers in, like, a school setting, learning about those sort of things?
Well, the wonderful thing about Al-Anon is that there's a sister program called Al-Ateen, and it's designed for folks who are teens who are affected by another person's drinking. And often it's set up through often the influence would be a parent or other relative that they've encountered in their life whose drinking affects their lives, and who therefore want to relate to other people who are going through the same thing. And in Portland, I know where I live, there's an Al-Ateen meeting every Monday night, mm-hmm. at Clark Methodist Church. It goes for an hour, and it's an opportunity for teens who are affected to find comfort and support.
So, and this is just a question kind of about the sort of more the philosophy of Al-Anon, but sort of how does talking about alcoholism or drinking, I mean, I get the sense it's mostly harmful drinking, help the relationship with the alcoholic? And is the program directed more at the alcoholic or the drinker or their family or like those who they may affect?
That's a great question. The program is designed for people who are affected themselves.
Mm-hmm.
It's not really about the alcoholic. It's about the impact that the alcoholic or other alcoholics they've grown up with have had in their lives. So in my experience, I was married to a woman who's an alcoholic, and we still have three kids together. And that's what brought me into the program. In fact, the reason I went in was her mom, mm-hmm. brought me. And so my ex-mother-in-law was the reason I went into the program, because 30 years ago, she went into the program herself. Mm-hmm. And the beautiful thing was that what I found there was support for being who I am. And it's sort of a funny thing because, you know, I don't know if it's being a guy or whatever, but you don't talk really about your feelings. Mm-hmm. You just kind of like soldier on. And there's a lot of soldiering on with folks who are living with folks suffering from alcoholism. And Al-Anon's a place to sort of find other people to relate to who are going through the same thing. And the reason I go is because I hear stories every time I go to a meeting of people telling their own experience, strength, and hope that I relate to. Mm-hmm. And I could remember those times and feel those same ways. And it's just there's something about not feeling alone that's just better, you know? I mean, a lot about our culture is self-reliance and doing it ourselves and making it work for us. And what I've learned in my life is that there's a time for that, but there's also a time to find other people who are going through what you're going through and to relate to that and feel the support and the love that that brings you. So it's a wonderful place to be.
So you had set Al-Anon this for families, but is the person with the drinking problem involved at all in the Al-Anon programs?
It's not necessarily. They could be because they themselves could be affected by alcoholism. But there's typically there's another program. There's AA, that's sort of the brother program of Al-Anon. For them, there's also NA and other substance abuse and addict related programs. So there are places designed for folks who have the substance abuse, whereas Al-Anon is not that place. Mm-hmm. Al-Anon's about the folks who are family members of those with those issues and the behaviors that we all share and sort of trying to take care of things before they become problems and in trying to control other people's behaviors, hoping for the best results. And there's a real educational process. When you've done something the same way for years and years and years, it's a real effort to sort of look at honestly how you're behaving and ask yourself, is this really working for me anymore? Mm-hmm. But they're sort of the essence of the program is similar to AA. There's 12 steps.
Yeah.
And folks come in, understand what those steps are, and work with them, often through sponsorship. And that's an important relationship in Al-Anon as it is in the other programs, as I understand it. Mm-hmm. And through that, you really learn to grow and learn who you are and develop a better sense of yourself that allows you to interact more honestly and openly and humbly with the people around you who are affected.
Mm-hmm. How do you think your opinion of alcohol as a substance has changed over the last 4 years? Do you feel like it's inherently harmful, or do you feel like... you know, yeah, just sort of how has it changed? How do you think Al-Anon has changed that?
You guys ask great questions.
thank you.
I'll just say that I look at alcohol, everyone's different in program, okay? Mm-hmm. I'll just say that. My own experience is I am grateful for the alcoholics in my life. I heard people say that when I first came in, and I cringed. I said, how mm-hmm. could you ever be grateful for the crazy that you deal with? Mm-hmm. But what it's forced me to do is grow. Like, I had it all worked out, I thought, and all I needed to do was have certain things from others in my life. And by departing from that and realizing that that's my job to work on who I am without, you know, demanding other behaviors from other people, it's allowed me to grow more. So when I think of alcohol, I just think of it as just like any other substance. There are going to be people who are physically addicted to that, and it's a hard life. You know, and that's just something you have to soldier on with if you're addicted to alcohol. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have compassion for that.
Yep.
But it's you know, there's a lot. People come into program, they're either angry or they're sad. And people stay around hopefully long enough to find some joy. And so, you know, when people come into program, it's funny because people will be laughing because, mm-hmm. you know, it's crazy. But there's humor in it, and we find, you know, people who I sit in meetings with, we laugh about things. And I remember when I first came in saying, how there is nothing funny about my life and mm-hmm. what's going on and the stuff I'm dealing with. But there's just something about being together with other people, sharing it, that it does, you start to get the joke, you know. Mm-hmm. It's God's joke, if you will.
Does being together with other people going through the same experiences help you get through your experience?
Absolutely. It's critical. What I love about living in Portland is just many, many things. It's the forerunner in a lot of places. It's a wonderful place to be. But one of them is that there's a meeting for Al-Anon every single day in town. And there's often more than one. And so there's always a meeting if you can get it. And there are like-minded people there. And it's an anonymous program. And so you don't really talk about where you went to school. You don't talk about what you do for work. You don't talk about what political views you have or religion mm-hmm. you hold. But what you do is you talk honestly about how your life is going, mm-hmm. and people listen to each other. And it's just one of those things. There's lots of different slogans, and listen and learn is the one that, when I'm feeling crazy, I'll sit through an hour of an Al-Anon meeting, and I'll come out the other side feeling better mm-hmm. and more centered.
Yep.
It's kind of meditative, I guess, in a way, mm-hmm. but it's working for me, so far so good.
So I just like to remind everyone again that this is a call-in show. You can call us. Our number is 780-4909. That is 780-4909. And you can ask our guest David a question about Al-Anon. You can ask us questions as teenagers. You can wait around a little longer, and we'll have some other guests as well. So then also, David, and I suppose this is more sort of from the perspective as a parent, how do you think Al-Anon or just your experience in life has sort of prepared you for dealing with teenage children who may or may not come across opportunities to drink alcohol?
My mic went out, so I'm still on, right?
Yeah, okay. Your headphones?
All right.
Okay.
How's my experience in life and Al-Anon prepared me for dealing with alcohol and other substances, the teenagers?
Yep.
It's a great question. I think it's simplified my life in terms of parenting, mm-hmm. where, and I'm not perfect, but what I try to do is just offer unconditional love. Mm-hmm. And that doesn't mean you get to do whatever you want.
Right.
But that my kids know that I'm there for them mm-hmm. Through whatever. And I think, I'm hoping that's the essence of making good choices, is to feel like, whatever I do, it's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And when I went into program, it was all about what I knew and how many facts I knew and things I kept track of. And now, basically, it's simply I really know that I'm enough and everything's going to be okay. Mm-hmm. And so I try to convey that same sense to my kids as much as I can. And so they'll have choices. And what I realize as a parent is those are hard choices to make. It's not black and white. And so every situation is going to be different, and however they handle it, I just want them to know that they're loved, and mm-hmm. we'll make the best of it.
Yeah, and this is a question which you sort of already addressed, but just do you think that drinking before the legal drinking age is sort of by definition harmful or bad? And do you think there can ever be a healthy place for illegal teenage drinking in culture?
Hmm. It's definitely illegal in every state.
Right.
So by doing it, you're breaking the law. Mm-hmm. At the same time, it's very prevalent.
Yep.
And it's my impression.
Yeah.
And it's a real choice to ask yourself, this is a choice I have. Mm-hmm. Do I think it's possible to make it legal? I mean, there are other countries where mm-hmm. I understand it is.
Yep.
And they have different issues. I think that the sensationalism around the drinking age mm-hmm. Does make it attractive mm-hmm. as a substance in a way that that it might lose if you took that out. Mm-hmm. At the same time, is you've got to draw the line conservatively. Personally, I think socially, mm-hmm. In terms of trying to keep kids away until they're emotionally mature enough to choose. And my impression from growing up was I was faced with choices before I was emotionally ready to choose a lot of the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And those are the times where I'm just hoping they have a support group that they can say, mm-hmm. what are you doing? And just ask the question and be aware that they're making a choice rather mm-hmm. than just going along with it.
Yeah, and I really think that, sort of being a teenager, the sense that I think is given off is that the kids who are drinking a lot or doing drugs a lot are sort of in, are almost like brought to the forefront in terms of being in parents' minds, or like sort of culturally, those who choose not to do it quite as often are not thought about quite as often. And it's like there are always going to be kids in every generation, there always have been, there always will be, most likely, who do drugs and drink to an unhealthy degree. At the same time, I think there have been a lot of kids who, you know, they experiment with things, they try something a couple times, maybe even more than that, but it's sort of like a neutral thing. It doesn't really affect them. I mean, I think like the sense that I get just being around teenagers is that there's really just not a sense that it can be dangerous and it can affect you for the rest of your life, or it could trigger some chain of, you know, abusive use of a substance that can last a whole lot longer than you ever intended it to. And I think that, like, in terms of being in health class or like going through school, you learn about reasons why not to do it, but you really never learn, you know, considering that you are, there's high probability that you at one point before you're legally allowed to will be doing this. There's really no discussion of like doing it. Here are some things to know. Like, here are some ways to be safe. Here are some people you can talk to if you feel like you're whatever. It just seems like the discussion is never really geared towards like if you do it, when you do it, how to do it, and when to even know if it's unsafe or like when to stop or whatever. And it's just, it seems like, you know, even like I've never heard of Alateen before. And it's pretty, it's just, to me, is like, that seems like such a wonderful resource for a lot of people. And I think you would be hard pressed to find a teenager in any school who doesn't have some personal connection to drinking. If they themselves don't, they most absolutely know somebody who does. Yeah.
Those are great points. My own, I just wanted to add, mm-hmm. is that, you know, a lot of, you know, there's a lot of shame.
Yep.
There's a lot of embarrassment, and there's a lot of not wanting to look like you don't know what's going on. And I think that's true as you get older. It becomes less so as you learn more and more who you are. Mm-hmm. But as a teen in particular, you're going through a lot. And what's great about Alateen is it's a confidential place mm-hmm. to share who you are as much as you're able and wish to. You know, that's something about the program personally for Al-Anon I have, and Alateen even more so. Mm-hmm. That's what you have is a chance to really tell somebody else who will listen to you what's going on in your life.
Yep.
And so I think it's a helpful way to just bounce ideas off, like you were saying. You know, what's a smart way to do this on myself, or what's mm-hmm. not a smart way to do this? Just share your experiences openly and honestly as best you're able. That's another environment for that. I don't know if there's like an AA comparable to Alateen.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I believe it's all AA.
Mm-hmm.
But there are
but
many
sure
people
are, like,
who are underage, who are eligible mm-hmm. to go to a meeting
yeah.
and find help there.
So I feel like a lot of teenagers don't take alcoholism seriously. It's kind of like a joke, like, oh, well, I mean, you could drink a lot, but are you really an alcoholic as a teenager? And does Alateen and the Al-Anon groups help kind of bring to light that that's a legitimate issue for teenagers, and it's not just a joking matter. It's not just ha-ha drinking.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think my sense is that alcoholism is a very serious illness, but I can understand wanting to, you know, deny the significance of it in people's lives, and the way you do that is sort of say, oh, it's not a big deal, it's not a big deal. That's absolutely part of understanding what you're dealing with. And it's all about honestly looking at your situation. And, you know, being around people who are affected can help you do that.
Yep.
Personally, I think it's a great thing. The thing that I like about the Alateen program now in Portland is there's a new director for it in our group. And there's a lot more outreach going on. Mm-hmm. And trying to keep it confidential and have kids come in is a big important aspect of it, so mm-hmm. that they don't feel like they're, you know, if they get over that hurdle of looking at it as a small deal for them, mm-hmm. then to realize they can talk about whatever they want in the Alateen context. And it's a wonderful program. There's a lot of great sponsors who'll sit and help. And, you know, I think it's a valuable aspect to have as a program of support around alcoholism. And it's a prevalent disease. You know, it kills a lot of people. alcoholism. Mm-hmm. And it's something that we're all affected by in one way or another.
Right.
And I frankly think Al-Anon should be 10 to 15 times the size it is. Mm-hmm. But there's so many societal pressures, I think, that keep people from looking at this stuff.
Yeah,
that
definitely.
I relate to. And I was the same way until I had that desperation gift, too.
Mm-hmm. And this is sort of more about your own experience, but how do you think somebody could know when they are either an alcoholic or drinking in an unhealthy way?
Well, one way to do it is if people are telling you.
Mm-hmm.
That's maybe not the teen experience. I don't know.
It's funny. Yeah, it's a good point because I really, you know, people talk about drinking, but they never talk about it in sort of like one specific person drinking. It's all, you know what I mean? Like it just seems like it's that conversation would never really happen among teenagers.
Yeah. Exactly. But one person I said who, from the AA program told me that if enough people tell you you have a tail, you'll turn around and look.
Yeah.
So asking people who you trust, mm-hmm. and there may not be that many people in your life you really trust, but asking someone you trust, do you think I have a problem? You know, I think you can probably go online and take a test too. Mm-hmm. You know, there's probably all sorts of available resources, and you can, find all sorts of ways why you're not an alcoholic if you want that answer.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's a question of what do you really want out of your life? Do you really want to look at who you are or not? And that's a tough question to ask. But, you know, the more you ask it, the easier it is to do.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I do think that, that there, the one way to go in is to go to an AA meeting and see if you relate to anything you hear.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're relating to any of the stories, then you might have an issue. And, you know, that's one thing. I mean, that's a little bit scary to just go to a meeting.
Right, but it's
helpful.
But that's one option. Mm-hmm. There is also hotlines available where you can call and just talk with anonymously about something that's going on in your life and ask, you know, is this something that's real?
Yep.
Because you can, as you say, blow something out of proportion or just
totally.
Deny it.
Mm-hmm.
It's an easy thing to do.
If you were to have, like, a friend you were to think had, like, a drinking problem, do you think there's a proper way to approach the subject with them, like, if you know it could be a sensitive point?
Absolutely. I mean, everybody's different. For me, I've learned in program that it's okay to say how I feel about something.
Right.
And if I had a friend who I thought had a problem, I could say, I feel you have a problem. And the key is to then... That's it. I mean, that's what your role is. It's not to make them go. It's not to tell them. You know, it's that boundary thing that, you know, has been a big challenge.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like, if they don't go, will they still talk to you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you're taking a risk in a friendship or other relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And one thing to do is ask yourself, do I really feel that way about them? You know, what are my motives for asking that question?
Right.
Do I want to get something out of them? What are my motives? If I'm concerned about their health and their well-being, it's absolutely legitimate to say, I think you may have a problem. Have you thought about that too?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that may be the spark that lights them to, mm-hmm. to go take better, healthier behaviors.
Yeah. And I mean, I think it's tough because if you think about sort of like if somebody can get into these habits of drinking unhealthily, which then develop into, you know, real alcoholism, I think a lot of like because I've looked like, you know, like how to, you know, just sort of like, I don't even know, like characteristics of people who are drinking or doing drugs unhealthily. And it seems like a lot of what's there is kind of applicable to just how people drink in high school and perhaps college. You know, those people who do anyway, it seems like, you know, there's no denying that there are a lot of unhealthy drinking happens in high school. And it almost seems like the time at which you could come out of that into being an adult and drinking unhealthily as an adult, you know, you may even be, you might even like cross the threshold to the place where you're actually putting yourself in danger and it's no longer just like drinking with everybody else, the same way that everybody else does. So, I mean, I don't know if this is something you know, but do you have any sense of how many people who are alcoholics started drinking really young, or is there really no correlation?
I don't really know. Mm-hmm. My sense in stories is that people started often very young.
Mm-hmm.
Like, there is an open AA meeting I attend on occasion in town that I really enjoy because it's 12 steps and there are more guys than gals, and Al-Anon's more gals than guys. So I like going to the 12-step mm-hmm. program with the guys. And I've heard stories about 11 years old, mm-hmm. 12 years old. And to me, that once you start these habits early, it's easier to go down a wrong path eventually
because right.
there's yeah. much more time in your life. And when you're young, I mean, I was immortal. I
yeah,
don't know if
absolutely.
You guys are immortal, but that's your perception, is that mm-hmm. this is for the future.
Mm-hmm.
And so all sorts of behavioral choices you might think twice of when you're older and you're like, God, I can't deal with that, being feeling that way again tomorrow.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't occur. It's
yeah.
all about the moment.
Yeah.
So there are all sorts of temptations. I think people afflicted with the disease might not know it for quite some time.
Mm-hmm.
It might be years and years. But the my understanding of alcoholism is it's progressive. So the longer you're living, the worse it gets for you.
Mm-hmm.
And so if you don't drink for a long time and then you pick up another drink years later,
right. yeah. mm-hmm.
the disease has still progressed inside.
Yep.
That's my understanding.
Yeah, thank you. So we are going to need to go to break now. Again, we've been speaking with David, Al-Anon member. This is Blunt Youth Radio.
Mm-hmm.
Thanks for listening so far, and we'll be back in about 5 minutes.
Yep.
Living in a single room with three other individuals. One of them was a male, and the other two, well, the other two were females. God only knows what they were up to in there. And furthermore, Susan, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to learn that all four of them habitually smoke marijuana cigarettes. Reefers.
Tonight, a chance of rain showers before 3 a.m., then rain and snow showers likely. The snow could be heavy at times, increasing clouds with a low around 30. Southwest winds at 10 to 15 miles per hour. Chance of precipitation is 60%. Total nighttime snow accumulation of less than half an inch possible. Tuesday's weather is a 30% chance of snow showers before 8 a.m. Cloudy, then gradually becoming most likely sunny with a high near 40. Northwest winds around 50 miles per hour. Tuesday night mostly clear with a low around 21. Northwest winds at 10 to 15 miles per hour.
Let me try it one more time.
1665
55 92 9.
It's yes.
Well, where are they?
They're in the,
we have dead air now. Thank you.
They have to get on. She was living in a single room with three other individuals. One of them was a male, and the other two, well, the other two were females. God only knows what they were up to in there. And furthermore, Susan, I wouldn't be the least bit surprised to learn that all four of them habitually smoke marijuana cigarettes. Reefers.
All right, welcome back to Blunt. Again, this is the Drugs and Drinking Show. I'm Isaac High, still.
And I'm Lucy Tapp, still.
And we have two guests with us now for the second half. Maybe part of the second half. We've got Tony Zelli, who's the campaign manager for Yes on One, or the Marijuana Legalization Campaign in Portland, a Green Party activist, and has worked as an advocate for environmental health and workers' rights. And we also have Dave Marshall, who has been a Portland City Council member for 7 years, as most recently wrote the Marijuana Legalization Ordinance, which was passed last Tuesday in Portland. So thank you both for coming on and talking to us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks for having us.
So I suppose, first of all, my question is just, what changes have we seen since the ordinance was passed?
We haven't really seen any changes at this point. The ordinance hasn't gone into effect. basically the message so far from the police chief is that it's status quo, that nothing's going to change, that the state law is still going to be cited. You know, there's some different feelings out there in the community about that, you know, but I'm going to be meeting up with some city officials this coming week and trying to go over, you know, this and try to figure out if there's a, you know, a middle ground, because, you know, I do feel that 67% of the vote is a mandate by the voters, and there's got to be some, you know, I like the discretion that the police officers have been using, because citations of possession of marijuana have decreased about 26% over a year. And, you know, that's what we want to see happen. So we're already trending in the right direction.
Yep. So... And I guess this may tie directly into that, but I was just going to ask for, you know, the coming months and years, what are you most worried about in terms of, you know, this ordinance being upheld, or sort of like if it's going to, I mean, like you said, if it's even going to affect anything?
Well, I think voters sent a clear message to the state government and to the federal government that we're tired of wasting our resources on a drug war that is not working. And 67% of the voters here in Portland are saying this is not working. This is not how we use our resources to tackle this public health and personal health issue. And so I think that ultimately where we need to go next is to the state level. We need sensible policies at every level of government, and this is just the first step.
Yeah, I was actually just going to ask that, which was for the future, do you think that it makes the most sense to do sort of what Portland has done, which is write ordinances at the city level and kind of, you know, cover a lot of ground slowly like that, or try to work more for state legislature or even national legislature?
I think it's very important that we attack this issue at every level. I think that there's other cities in the state of Maine have passed legalization ordinance language in the past. I believe the first was Starks, Maine, back in the 90s. So I definitely think that's a tactic that can be taken, but the ultimate goal has to be state legislation.
So what was the thought on how, like, the youth would be affected by passing this ordinance? Like, was there any thought on, like, what sort of message that might send to teenagers, or how their views on smoking or using marijuana would change?
Well, we really wrote this in order to be for to affect adults, to be 21 plus. We put that in there very clearly, and you know our hope is that that teenagers will use marijuana less, and we hope that adults will use marijuana less. And if you look at countries that have laws that are more permissive than in the United States, you actually see less marijuana use.
Yep.
Portugal decriminalized small amount of all drugs a decade ago, and they've seen all use of drugs you know, go down, and also the negative things associated with drug use. A lot of times, particularly like heroin, involving deaths and HIV and other sexually transmitted diseases, because instead of treating people like they're criminals, they treat them like they have a disease, and then put them into services. So instead of going before a judge, if you were caught with a substance, you would be sent in front of a panel that would involve social service workers, legal experts, and medical experts that then can recommend treatment.
Yep.
And that's been very successful. You know, in the United States, over 43% of adults have ever tried marijuana in their lifetimes. If you look at Holland, where Amsterdam is, it's 20%. So, you know, there's a lot of stats out there to support it. And in Maine, we've actually seen a decrease in marijuana use since medical marijuana was enacted in 1999. because lifetime drug use or marijuana use by teenagers in 1997, which predated that, was about 51%. Mm-hmm. And in 2011, the most recent time we've seen those stats, it was 36%. Mm-hmm. Also, similarly, current use went down and went from 36% in 1997 and went down to 21% in 2011. And that's information I got off the Centers for Disease Control mm-hmm. Database.
Great, thank you. So I'd just like to remind everybody yet again that this is a call-in show. You can call us at 780-4909, 780-4909. We're speaking with Anthony Zelli and David Marshall, both of whom were involved in the writing and passing of the marijuana legalization ordinance this Tuesday. So, so it's very interesting because I definitely get the sense that a lot of people on the youth level who might see or hear that marijuana is legal in Portland, obviously it takes a little bit of thought beyond just hearing that to actually research and read what the ordinance is saying and what the effects are. But I'm definitely just interested in, like, you know, there's certainly a difference between alcohol and marijuana in American culture and youth culture, I think, specifically because you're introduced to marijuana in a very different way than you are alcohol, a lot of people. I mean, not necessarily me, because neither of my parents drink alcohol, but, you know, growing up around it and seeing it being used responsibly is not really something that a lot of kids get the opportunity to see regarding marijuana. So I guess, do you think that, you know, in this idealistic society where marijuana was decriminalized or legalized and, you know, people could use it without legal persecution, do you think that it would, in a sense, you know, make it seem more societally acceptable, or do you think that it would remain around the same place that it is today?
Well, I think it, when you look at marijuana use and the different uses for it, it depends on the situation. Medical use of marijuana is more common in Maine because the law passed in 1999. Yep. So the legal use of marijuana as a medicine is a much different culture than when marijuana is treated as a street drug. Mm-hmm. So as far as I can tell, people, the feedback we got from the public when we were doing the campaign, you know, there were certain concerns that were consistently raised. People would say, well, what about people being intoxicated while driving?
Yep.
And, you know, I said, well, the state law operating under the influence already covers that.
Yep.
And also the ordinance says that you can't use marijuana on transportation infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
So then there was a question often that's raised about, okay, well, what about smoking in public? And the ordinance says that you cannot smoke in public places mm-hmm. or on school grounds. And so not having the use in those areas, and if use is on private property mm-hmm. By adults, then it's not really going to be out there in society in that same sort of way. When marijuana does become legal in Maine and the United States, mm-hmm. it should follow similar laws around
right.
advertising that we have mm-hmm. for tobacco and alcohol. Mm-hmm. And also,
I'm not totally clear on what the rules of, like, public intoxication or public drinking is, but I assume it would be similar to that. We also have a phone caller, I believe. Karen from Portland. Hello.
Hi.
Hi.
Hi, yes, I'm calling because I work with teens who are very pleased with the passage of the age of 21 here in Portland. I find that there's a lot of naivete, which is understandable, of thinking that it means they have sort of the right just to go and get stoned all the time, and there's an underappreciation of the long-term effects of it, or even short-term. We now see a higher rate of first psychotic breaks for teens that are using marijuana, because also the marijuana that's around now is of a very different strength than was around maybe 40 years ago or 30 years ago. So there's because it's marijuana, it's a plant. There's a lot of teens misunderstanding that, and because there's medicinal marijuana, oh, it's safe. I can use it whenever and whatever, and it's not true. So it's I do find teens still a little misunderstanding of what marijuana really is all about. And I try to impress on them that it's a sacred plant. It's, whether it's this or peyote or whatever, these are actually sacred plants used in other cultures to, in religious contexts or, say, in spiritual contexts. So, anyway, I just hope some teens are listening to that.
Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
Definitely. I think education is very important, and that's how we need to tackle these difficult issues, is people need to be well-informed and use that information to make smart decisions. And we definitely, in the drafting of this ordinance, we're very specific to point out that it's addressing adult usage, mm-hmm. age 21 and over, responsibly, privately. That's what this ordinance is all about. Mm-hmm.
And we also knew that this was one step along the road, and the next step really had to be at the state level.
Yep.
With the state law, because the Portland ordinance is overridden by state law.
Right.
Yep. So, we discourage the use of marijuana by teenagers as your mind's developing. Having any psychoactive substances can really negatively impact your mind. Mm-hmm. And, so we certainly discourage that. Actually, the comment about it being a sacred plant is pretty interesting, because there was a story on ABC recently where there was a tomb was found. It was 2,700 years old. Mm-hmm. And, it was of a shaman in the Gobi Desert. And they found inside the tomb, marijuana that mm-hmm. had been cultivated for, to have a THC content to it.
Right.
And but interestingly enough, there wasn't any smoking apparatus mm-hmm. with it, so it was likely used as a medicine by that shaman.
Mm-hmm.
The use of marijuana. The earliest records is about 6,000 BC, and that was in ancient China. It was used for religious purposes and medical purposes.
So with the passing of this ordinance, do you have any next steps to really make sure that the teenagers and the youth are being educated on how this is not saying that they are allowed to be using marijuana? Like, have you put any thought into making sure that this is addressed?
Yep, absolutely. I know that from the part of the Portland Greens, who were leaders on this issue, we are currently developing workshops in order to explain the ordinance and the effect that it has or doesn't have, so that people know the facts and are aware of the facts when they make their decisions. It's still in development, but we hope to be rolling something out as soon as possible, because there is a lot of misinformation out there.
Do you think that drug education in schools needs to be reformed in any way? Because I think we were speaking with our other guest a lot about this, and just having had some personal experience with the drug education programs in health class, it just seems like there's quite a bit lacking from how they're set up, or like their curriculum.
I can say that when I was going through school, it was the drug awareness resistance education. I think a lot of times when you're looking at education involving drugs, you should also look at the education that you're involving with sex. Mm-hmm. And the more information people have about various outcomes is really important so that way people can make good choices. But just as we know that abstinence-only education hasn't been successful.
Yeah, exactly.
Also, when you're talking about drugs and alcohol, often in this country we talk about abstinence as being the only road. Mm-hmm. And there's other philosophies out there around harm reduction models.
Yep.
And you know, I think we need to really open up our minds about, you know, what can we do that will have the best results. One thing certain for me is that the way we handle people when we find either youth or adults with a controlled substance or any type of drug or alcohol, instead of turning those people into a criminal, we need to turn them into, you know, basically treat them as somebody who needs some help, because a simple marijuana possession charge for an adult, you know, anybody 18 or older, goes on your criminal background check as a federal drug offense, and that will follow you around for the rest of your life. And every time you try to get a job or you try to get housing, that will appear also as grounds for denial for all federal benefits. So it can really the penalties can often be more damaging than the substance itself, and that's certainly the case with marijuana.
Yeah, and then I think just given that marijuana use among teens has and always likely will be, is you know, like, quite, it's prevalent. Like, there's really no denying that teenage people often use marijuana. So I suppose my question regarding that is, What do you think is the best route to go about, given that people are going to be using these drugs, educating and, I mean, I don't know if it's like warning about the potential dangers that they might not know about, but just kind of like knowing about how to be safe with using drugs. And especially that it seems to me that there's these two camps. There's like, in health class, the information you're given is very much anti-drug, and then if you look on the internet, like, there are a lot of websites, you know, like Arrowhead or like other like drug education websites on the internet. A lot of those are very much not necessarily pro-drug, but written by people who have personal experience with the drugs they're writing about, and just a lot less conservative than the health class teachers might be. So, do you think there's a happy medium, and I guess where do you think that should be?
There's absolutely a happy medium. I think honesty is where you begin, and openness, and creating safe space where you can have open conversations. That's always the best place to get to truth. And everyone's individual experience will be different. So I think we definitely need our educators to be honest and open. That's going to be the best way they can be effective. And I think that some of the prevalency of teen use, it's just a sign of that what we're doing now is failing horribly. Yeah. And that it's time that we start addressing these problems differently. Yeah. And that's definitely a message that 67% of Portlanders sent with this past election. Criminalizing, punishing people is not how you deal with these issues.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And then especially, I mean, you know, it's interesting because using drugs at school or possessing drugs at school, what the penalty is, and I've seen, you know, like, peers succumb to this, I guess you could say, the penalty is just suspension, and there's no discussion really about it beyond just being suspended. You come back to school after 5 days or so, and then it's permanently on your record. When you apply to colleges, they know that this happened to you or you did this. And that, to me, just seems like really misguided, because it doesn't do anything but hinder the person from moving on in life. And, you know, obviously not every kid smoking pot at school is doing it because they have a addiction or they have some problem with it. It could just be like a silly decision they made. But to me, it just seems like, I mean, that example, I think, is definitely evident of kind of why the system is not particularly working, or it's not working very well in school.
And, like, saying that, do you think that there's a right, like, a way with this ordinance being passed, and if it were to be passed across the state of Maine, for there to be something addressing teenage use and how that's going to be, how that's going to be looked at, and the procedures that law enforcement and schools should go through to properly get these kids, like, the punishment or the help that they need?
Yeah, I would say go to a model of referring people under 21 who are caught with possession, referring them to a panel of experts who are mental health experts, who are drug abuse experts, and doctors and legal experts, and work with them in order to get the help they need. And you know, whether it's marijuana, you know, as a starting point, or ultimately, if as a country, we start looking at other models. You know, I still think that having that criminal, mark on your background, even though it's called a civil offense, is still a crime. It still shows up as a mm-hmm. drug crime.
Yep.
And, you know, I think that method hasn't worked, and we should be really providing people the support they need.
Yeah, I mean, it's really like, you know, it's sort of too, it's almost like scaring people away from doing it by sort of threatening like this life, potentially life-altering punishment. And you can say that a suspension is not a big deal, but if you take two comparable kids, one of whom has a totally clean record and the other one was suspended for having some marijuana at school, there's clearly one of those kids is going to either get the scholarship or get into the college or get the internship or whatever. And it just seems like, which is not necessarily saying that kids should be totally absolved of their misdemeanors or whatever. But and I think that the show is more or less wrapping up, but I just wanted to sort of add that before we left.
Thank you very much. It was a pleasure being here today with
you. Yeah, thank you both for coming.
It was a pleasure having you on the show.
Yeah, thanks for the invite. It was fun catching up.
Yeah, all
right. Have us back anytime.
All right, we will. So next up is some jazz. All righty. Thank you.
Cool.
Thank you so much.
It was awesome.
Thank you for listening to Blunt.